Drive Time on RTE Radio 1, sponsored by Zurich. New year, new decade. Be future ready with Zurich, the power behind your pension.
Now, earlier in the programme, we heard about moves in the US House of Representatives to send impeachment charges to the Senate. In the last few minutes, members of the House have voted to send those charges to the Senate, as expected, triggering the next stage of the trial against Donald Trump. The House voted largely on party lines, 228 Democrats voting in favour, and one Democrat joining 192 Republicans to vote against sending the charges. So that moves on as early as next Tuesday, we understand now, to the Senate. Here at home, banks are calling for legislative changes to allow them to better deal with mortgage holders who are separating. It's estimated that approximately 1 in 10 cases of mortgage arrears involves borrowers who are separated or separating. I'm joined by Anne O'Neill. She's a solicitor with Anne O'Neill Family Law. Anne O'Neill, good evening.
Good evening, Mary.
I'm sure you regularly deal with couples who are separating where, I suppose, currently one person is paying their share of the mortgage, the other half of the couple is not. Is there any protection at the moment for the person who is paying their share of the debt if the bank wants to move to repossess?
Well, unfortunately not, Mary, because the bank's security arises on foot of the mortgage. And ultimately, of course, the security that they're relying on is the property upon which the mortgage is secured. So the bank, well, they're in the business of making money from lending. If the debt is not serviced, ultimately, they will exercise the option to foreclose and the property will be sold and everything moves on. But unfortunately, when couples are separating, you will often find that one party disengages financially from the running of the family home and the other party who's left behind does their best. So I'm not surprised to see the results today that 10% of all mortgage arrears arise in separated situations. But no, there's no protection for the party who is presently doing their best and perhaps paying 50% of the mortgage, because the entire mortgage is due, not just 50%.
And the Banking and Payments Federation now exploring, I suppose, possibilities. They mention insolvency legislation that would allow a lender to pursue a co-debtor. Do you think that could work in practice?
Well, that might be able to work in practice, but I mean, the reality is that the bank can accept in insolvency positions can always pursue both of the debtors, but ultimately they're going to rely on their security, and the security is actually the property. So, and that's why the nature of mortgage borrowings is that they're at a lower rate of interest, etc. But that might possibly work, but I can't comment too much about that, Mayor, because insolvency is not my area of practice.
Okay. But this whole question of mediation, this idea that the issue of the mortgage should be part of the mediation process, is it already?
Well, it is, Mary. I mean, I was very surprised to hear Brian Hayes raise this as one of the proposals. I mean, fundamentally, the most important asset that most people have, and the most significant asset, is their property. The mortgage is usually a feature of that. So every family law solicitor who is practicing in this area, who's halfway worth their salt, is always going to deal with the mortgage issue. So solicitors refer parties to mediation. In some cases, solicitors are mediators. I'm a qualified mediator myself. But most mediations are conducted actually not by solicitors. But any solicitor who has sent a client forward with on advice to attend mediation will have advised them in advance that one of the crucial issues to deal with is the issue of the family home and, of course, the mortgage secured thereon. So I think this is a bit of a red herring, really. I don't think that that's going to assist borrowers in dealing with the bank. I think mediation will always deal with mortgages. Also, mediation, you've got to remember, has no power to create binding orders. So again, it's whilst it's laudatory that people attend mediation and attempt to resolve issues, no binding orders can emerge from that process.
Well, as somebody, you know, practicing in this area and encountering these difficulties all of the time, are there any suggestions that you could make when you have this situation, one half of the couple perhaps living in the family home, paying half of the mortgage, the other half of the couple living elsewhere or who's no longer in the country or perhaps unable to pay and the bank is looking for its money back?
Well, ultimately, the bank will always get its money back, Mary. It's a bit like the Mountie. The Mounties, the bank always gets its man. But there is one area, actually, in thinking about this that strikes me as an area which could afford some protection to the paying spouse, if you like, or the paying joint partner. At present, if a mortgage goes into arrears, automatically the mortgagors are their credit rating is affected, both of the parties. So, for example, if you have a case where a husband or a wife contacts the bank and says, "I'm separating. I have always paid half the mortgage. I will continue to pay half the mortgage. I'm in a process which will ultimately result in court orders. So, I want it to be in some way my credit rating to be protected," because the credit rating these days is one of the most important assets that a party has post-separation to try and ensure their accommodation needs are met. So one of the areas where legislative intervention could assist would be to prevent a lender notifying the credit bureau of a failure to service a debt. And that would be a very important and of great assistance intervention by the government. And it would be practical. Because in the end of the day, the banks are in the business to lend money, to make money. And so they have to be protected to a certain extent in being able to enforce a security.
Just briefly, do the courts still take a lenient view when it comes to children in the family home, despite the fact that there may be arrears and significant arrears on a property? Are they slow to make orders allowing for the sale of a property to pay back the bank?
Well, that is not in family law cases. That is in repossession cases. The courts have traditionally been relatively slow to make repossession orders in those type of cases. But as I say, eventually, when all other avenues are exhausted, the banks will secure a foreclosure and will secure a sale of the property. In family law cases, the judges are very cognizant of the fact that no order they make in relation to the family home can prevent a bank from seeking to enforce its security. So just because there are dependent children who require housing, that will not prevent a judge, for example, directing the sale of a property because he or she is aware that the parties cannot continue to service the debt.
Anne O'Neill, family law solicitor, thank you very much.